Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Good morning. Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast. I'm Vanessa Walker, the managing editor of Money. I'm here to help fill you in on changes to the federal budget announced last night by Treasurer Jim Chalmers. We had our senior journalist, Tom Watson, in the budget lockup, and he's here to explain the changes that affect you. Welcome, Tom.
Good morning, Vanessa. How are you doing?
I'm very well. So the big change, mostly soft launched by the government before last night, were alterations to the investing landscape. Our tax system has traditionally rewarded investors via a 50% discount on profit across all assets, shares, ETFs, property, collectibles. So after holding these assets for a year, you can have a 50% discount on the profit that you make. You might make $10,000 profit from your shares, you're only taxed on $5,000. Nice. But this budget turns that tap off a little and reorientates our tax system. So Tom, let's start with the headline changes. Arguably two of the biggest were significant reforms to the capital gains tax discount mentioned and negative gearing. Can you talk us through what's actually going to change for people?
Can indeed, Vanessa. I spent a good 6 hours yesterday delving through the budget papers on this very topic. So if I can't do it now, then maybe I should be out of a job. But as you said, you gave us a really nice kind of wrap of what the capital gains discount currently is. So let me get straight into the changes. So from July next year, so July 1, 2027, that 50% discount is being scrapped, and it's going to be replaced by two things. Firstly, the price that you purchase your asset for, so your shares or your antique spoons, whatever it is, this will be adjusted for inflation based on CPI, meaning that investors are only taxed on their real gain. So that's the first bit of the change. The second bit of the change, though, is a new 30% minimum tax on capital gains. And that basically is going to be introduced so people can't minimize the tax bill by strategically selling their assets in a low income year. So those are the changes, but I guess it's important to also get into who they affect. So gains that have already been accrued via investments which were held before July 1 next year will still be covered by that old 50% CGT discount rule. So people won't be hit retrospectively. But going forward from that date, gains, whether they're made with existing assets or new assets, they will be taxed on the new rules. And there are a few exceptions, and there are much more complicated parts of it which I don't want to kind of get into in detail here, but that's the general thrust of the CGT changes.
All righty. Now, what about negative gearing? Where are we at with that?
Okay, negative gearing. So this is going to be a massive change to the kind of strategy that heaps of property investors have used over the last few decades. And very briefly, this is a strategy in which investors can offset losses made from their rental property against their taxable income if those losses outweigh the income that property produces. And I say property, negative gearing can be used on different assets, but the vast majority of it is used by property investors, residential property investors. So that's the current state of play. From July 1, 2027, though, that will only apply to investors who buy brand new properties. The current rules will be scrapped for existing homes. However, the existing negative gearing settings will be grandfathered for anyone who owned a property before the budget announcement was made. So literally 7:30 p.m. last night on May 12th. And that benefit will remain until the property is sold. So that's negative gearing in a nutshell.
Obviously, the CGT and negative gearing changes are linked directly to housing. But did the Treasurer announce any other new measures designed to address housing supply or affordability? We've got a big housing deficit, increased immigration, etc. What's he going to do about that?
Yeah. So as you said, those were probably the main ones, but there are a few other bits and bobs worth mentioning. I will say, as the budget papers are at pains to kind of emphasize, these are on top of existing measures already in place. So, you know, all the kind of various schemes for first home buyers and money towards, you know, various home building and stuff like that. So the budget has allocated a couple of $1 billion in additional funding to housing-related infrastructure. So roads, water, sewage, things like that. And that might sound really dull, really boring, who cares? But it's actually really important because it's often seen as one of the major sticking points to getting new housing supply developed. And it's the so-called last mile. And the government expects it to help bring tens of thousands of new homes online in the next decade. So that's one point. The second measure that's probably worth mentioning is that the government has also extended the ban on foreign purchases of residential housing for an extra 2 years until June 2029. It had been set to end next June. This is just on existing homes, not new stock, though, which foreign investors have been able to continue to buy. And like so many of the measures that, you know, were in the budget and some of them that we've already discussed, the aim of this is to give first home buyers more of an opportunity to purchase a home without unnecessary additional competition while still trying to keep that supply ticking up, which is the kind of crucial bit of the puzzle, even with all these kind of additional measures that are being put in place.
And I think the government said these changes will enable 75,000 new home buyers to enter the market. Is that right? That's their prediction.
That's right. Yeah, and which is a decent amount of people, but again, you know, it's probably a drop in the ocean in terms of the number of first home buyers that want to get in that currently can't.
Right. What about other tax reforms? Beyond the tax measures related to investments, what else did the budget deliver in the way of tax reform?
Yeah, there was another big announcement. The Working Australians Tax Offset, the WATO. And I don't know, are we calling it the WATO? The WATO, which
I heard it referred to that last night.
To the WATO?
Yeah.
That was my nickname in high school. So there we go. I like it. Anyway, this was floated to a degree before the budget came out, but what we didn't know was the exact figure. So anyway, the government is basically giving every working taxpayer $250 in their tax return by way of an annual offset, and people won't need to do anything to claim it. It will just appear. It's important to note that this is only for working taxpayers, though, so roughly 13 million people. And this was kind of a big part of the budget narrative overall last night in relation to tax, this recalibration of the tax system to the benefit of income earned through work rather than through, say, assets. The WATO, the WATO, won't come in until mid-2028, though, so don't expect to see it in your tax return in a few months' time or even next year, if I'm getting my years right. It's also worth saying that this will come on top of changes made to income tax brackets already made in recent years, and those that will start to come in the next couple of financial years as well. So plenty of tax relief to come. And just before we move on, Vanessa, finally on tax, the budget also confirmed the $1,000 instant tax deduction, which we knew about already. As the name implies, this is basically an instant deduction that lets taxpayers claim up to $1,000 in work-related deductions, so tools, clothing, travel, the usual bits and bobs, without providing receipts. So in theory, it'll be a faster, simpler way for people to make claims with, for people with fewer deductions. And the government expects this to help generate something like $205 per person on average for the roughly 40% of people it reckons will take it up. And again, we won't see it straight away, though. It'll start to apply from the 2026-2027 financial year, meaning that it'll appear on tax returns lodged from July 2027.
Delayed tax gratification right there. So clearly there's so much more we could talk about, but is there anything else that caught your eye as you trawled through the budget papers yesterday that you think listeners should know about?
Yeah, another one that's probably really important, and one that kind of was framed as this third pillar of tax reform in the same category as the changes to the CGT discount and negative gearing, but perhaps less relevant to many. This was to do with discretionary trusts and how their distributions are taxed. So a very, very quick overview. Discretionary trusts have historically allowed high-income earners to distribute income to their family members on lower tax rates. And this has effectively allowed them to lower a family's overall tax bill. But this is set to change. The government's planning to introduce a 30% minimum tax on distributions from these trusts, so very similar to the CGT changes. And like the CGT changes and the negative gearing changes, these changes to discretionary trusts will also kick in from July next year. So big year for July, for 2027 tax changes. July, we'll definitely be doing a podcast in the lead up to that to remind everyone of everything that's about to change.
Awesome. Tom, thank you so much for being in the lockup and for sharing everything that you know. Much appreciated. You've been listening to Vanessa Walker and Tom Watson on Money's Friends with Money podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.